From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is being made just this afternoon in Washington, where the Supreme Court is hearing three cases on whether it is legal to fire workers on the basis of their gender identity or sexual orientation. The ruling will serve as a statement on where the nation and the court stands on LGBTQ rights and could completely change the lives of many LGBTQ Americans. WXXI News will be following those cases today. You just heard NPR News following that. And they come in advance of the Image Out Festival in Rochester, the annual cultural event aimed at highlighting creative works, promoting awareness, and fostering dialogue around LGBTQ-related issues. This year's festival kicks off on Thursday. It runs through October 20th. It includes nearly 80 films and also programs and parties to tell you about. We preview the festival this hour, the issues involved with some of the films, and we're going to talk about a couple of powerful films that demonstrate the impact that discrimination and persecution can have on LGBTQ communities. I'd like to welcome our guests in studio. Michael Gamill is a programming director for Image Out. Welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Good afternoon, Evan.
Also with us in studio is Samantha Bonanno, who is, I think, fair to say, self-described as an ex-evangelical. That's a term that you often hear, and here you are, so it's nice
here
to have
I
you.
Am.
Thanks for being here.
Yes.
Also with us is Bishop Denise Donato, pastor at Mary Magdalene Church. And Bishop, the last conversation we had on this program was, you said, about a year and a half ago.
Yes, it
was.
So
it's great to have you back here. Thanks
Thank
for being
you.
Here.
Thank you, Evan.
On the line with us is Daniel Carslake, director of For They Know Not What They Do. Daniel, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for having me, Evan.
It's great to have you. And before we jump right into the festival, let me ask our guests just briefly, on this day where we're all watching Washington and these arguments being made, Michael, the Supreme Court is taking up three different cases. And let me just read a little bit about them, and I just want to kind of get some reaction from panelists on this. The Supreme Court decisions, obviously same-sex marriage became legal in this country 4 years ago, but there's many forms of possible and legal, still legal discrimination that people face in the workplace. Here's some data from USA Today. About half of LGBTQ people in the United States live in a state where they legally can be fired, blocked for a promotion, refused training, or harassed at their jobs, all because of their gender identity or sexual orientation. 21 states, only 21 states, D.C., and two territories have laws on the books explicitly banning bias in the workplace based on sexual orientation and gender identity. One quarter of LGBTQ people reported experiencing discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity, according to a 2018 report from the Movement Advancement Project. And when you take a look at the cases in particular, one of the cases involved is a case in which there was a man who was sent to, I think there was, Megan Mack, the producer, sent me some notes on this, and I don't see where they are in front of me, but one of the cases involves a man who said to a woman, you know, you can have your arm around me. I think they were climbing, and Megan's going to grab the information for me from my stack. It's a great stack. There's lots of notes here. It's somewhere. I'm bungling this. The point is, he said to her, you can put your arms around me. It's fine. You know, I'm gay. Don Zarda was his name. He was known as the Daredevil. He was a skydiving instructor. And he got fired in 2010 after he told a female customer, don't worry about it. We're going to be strapped together. You can put your arms around me. I'm gay. Well, he died in a base jumping accident in 2014, but his case is still going on over the termination over that firing in 2010. So here we are. When people say, can you really get fired? The answer is yes, or it depends on where you are, and the Supreme Court's going to have a lot to say about this. Michael Gamillo, let me start with you. When people question, well, you know, haven't we made a lot of progress? Can you really get fired for it? What do you think these cases mean to the LGBTQ movement right now?
I think it's good that it's being discussed because that's a step forward. But it's also ridiculous that that's still happening at this point because how someone performs his job has nothing to do with how he or she identifies and, you know, sexual identity and his sexuality. It has nothing to do with it, how well you do your job. And I imagine way, way, way back when most people are closeted, I think because you can get blackmailed for it, then it's probably, you know, some people are not comfortable with that because some people can be coerced to do things because they're hiding their sexuality. But now that most people are out in the open and more people are more educated about LGBTQ community, I think it's still ridiculous that's happening.
Mm-hmm. Are you someone, Michael, who looks at what happened 4 years ago with same-sex marriage? You look at the court now taking up the question of workplace discrimination and firing, and do you think, look, progress is moving, or are you nervous about these cases? Do you worry what the court's going to do here?
Well, the makeup of the court now worries me, but it's good that it's being discussed, but it depends on what they decide on, because it will be monumental, of course. If they say that it should be a basis for firing people, then that would be, you know, a huge step backward from all the gains that the LGBT community had from the previous administration.
Mm-hmm. Samantha, what do you make of what's going on in Washington? How important do you think these cases are going to end up being?
I think they're hugely important. I think we want to rest on the idea that, you know, the moral arc is long, but it bends toward justice. And I think that so far we've been going in that direction, but in the last few years we've taken giant steps back. And so I just don't think anything can be taken for granted. I don't think anything can be assumed.
Bishop, when we talked about some of the reasons that you have had for making some of the career decisions you've made, it's because, and I certainly want to speak for you, but I recall that conversation that, you know, justice matters, inclusion matters, and sometimes hard decisions have to be made. Are you looking at cases like this thinking, well, look, you know, we may have stumbles, but there will be progress, or are you nervous about what you're going to see out of the court?
I'm very nervous about what we're going to see out of the court. I believe that, there has been progress. There's been progress over the last few decades. But what is happening in the courts right now could take us back so far in a blink of an eye. And I'm concerned about that, and especially the tenor that seems to be part of our discussions in our nation at this time. Yes, I'm very concerned about it, Evan.
Daniel, what do you make of what's going on in Washington?
Well, I think it's paramount. I think, as everyone said, there has been a lot of progress made in the last couple decades in particular. But once marriage equality came to America in 2015, that signaled a major beginning of a backlash from the right that has taken many rights away from transgender people. Transgender people can no longer serve in the military. There are many, many more examples of gay bashing and kids being bullied in high schools and elementary schools even. So this politics of hate that have taken over this country have proven very detrimental to LGBTQ people. And if it is upheld that people can be fired for who God made them to be, whether it's about their sexual identity or their sexual orientation, that is another major step back at the federal level.
Well, we're going to be following that. NPR will be following that. And listeners might know that the court, in throughout their seasons of adjudication, often will consider, and then we will probably see decisions in June. That is the assumption. So usually wait till the spring to find out. But today's the day the court is starting to hear those three cases, and that those will be cases to watch. Now, Michael, for those who have not been to Image Out, it's a long history now. Why don't you frame what the mission is? It's coming up October 10th through the 20th at the Little, but tell me about the mission, and then we're going to talk about some of the films here.
Yeah, it's our 27th year, and of course, the mission is to educate and expose our audience to the different LGBTQ stories that we have, and the filmmakers that still make these movies, because there's a lot of advancement now in terms of LGBTQ acceptance. And you go to mainstream movies and you still see more representation, but the fact of the matter is there's still a lot of LGBTQ movies that would never see the light if not for gay and lesbian film festivals. And that's what we're here for, to make sure that voices are heard, stories are heard and seen, not just here in the U.S., but a lot of stories that come from different parts of the world that you never hear about. Like we have a lot of films coming from 21 countries this year, and some of those from as far as Asia and Africa that you don't get to hear about. And that's what we're here for.
October 10th, that's Thursday, through the 20th at the Little Theater.
And the Dryden.
And the Dryden. And before we dive in on a film like For They Know Not What They Do, because Daniel's going to be able to tell us about that, I think Samantha and Bishop Donato, they've got their own stories, I think, that really dovetail with some of the themes that are very powerful here. What do you want people to know about kind of following along with the festival, how to do that and how to get in touch with what's going on here, Michael?
Oh, we're online www.imageout.org, and we have our Facebook where we post daily updates, and people have any questions, they can contact the office at Village Gate. And we're still selling tickets, and we'll be selling tickets all throughout the festival, and they're available online. And we're very excited because the community is very excited, mm-hmm. because this is one of the biggest LGBTQ events of the year here in Rochester. And for most people, this is the time that they see a lot of friends, and mm-hmm. they come out of the woodwork. And, mm-hmm. you know, most people just are happy at home and go to work. And this is the one time that they go out and celebrate mm-hmm. the community.
All right, so the full list online, and we'll post it on our various platforms. Daniel Carslake's the director of For They Know Not What They Do. Daniel, we're going to talk specifically about the film, but I think the title itself, why don't you go ahead and explain what the title means there?
Well, the title is, of course, biblical. It is some of the last few words of Jesus as he's on the cross looking down at those who are killing him, saying, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." And we felt as we made the film and we told these stories of four religious families and how they dealt with the reality that they had either a gay child or a trans child, there was a lot of damage that was done, but in the name of love. This is not a movie that is condemning. It is a movie that's about people who think they are doing the right thing in the moment, but end up doing great damage. So we thought those words were particularly powerful because these are four families that are deeply Christian.
Michael, you, before we kind of get into what some of those family stories are, what did this film mean, and why did you want to make sure it came to Image Out here?
And, you know, this film is also our documentary centerpiece because we want to highlight it. It's just a lot of people. Religion can be a weapon for hurting people and destruction. And a lot of people don't realize that it's a powerful thing. So we want to make sure that this keeps people discussing all these things. And this film is a great tool to get the discussion out there.
Mm-hmm. For They Know Not What They Do, the families include Elliot, a transgender man whose parents struggle with his decision to transition. Victor was born in Puerto Rico and came out to his family, and his grandmother threw him out of the house. Sarah McBride is a well-known transgender rights activist who's spoken nationally about human rights, a trans woman who came out to her Christian parents when she was 12. And Ryan, a young gay man born into an evangelical family. His parents convinced him that being gay was wrong, that God would not accept him. Ryan asked to attend Exodus conferences and tried to stop being gay by reading books, among other things, and then eventually turned to drugs. And he died as a result of an overdose. I want to kind of key in on Ryan's story, if we could, Daniel, in particular. Why don't you tell me a little bit about what you think the impact of Ryan's story is?
Well, I would say the Robertson story, Ryan and his parents, Rob and Linda, I think their story is really the spine of the movie. They start it and they end it. And I thought that was important because they are proudly evangelical. They're from Redmond, Washington. They're really wonderful people. They have four kids, and their second child, Ryan, came out to them when he was 12. And they live in a community that told them that they needed to do everything they could to change that. So they put Ryan into conversion therapy for 6 years from the time he was 12 to 18. Conversion therapy is something that many states now realize is really just a straight up abuse of the human rights of the gay LGBT person. But in many other states, more than 30, it is still legal. And in those communities where people are most conservative religiously, it's seen as the answer. My take on that is that conversion therapy is like handing a loaded gun to a young LGBTQ person, because it's devastating when these kids come out to their parents and in their families, and they're rejected in such a strong way and told that who they are is wrong and that God doesn't agree. But when they are put into these ministries and told that God will change them, and God doesn't change them because this is who God made them to be, they feel a second, bigger rejection. So the Robertson family is both devastating, but in the end, surprisingly hopeful. And people have to see the film to understand that. But I thought it was really important as a filmmaker to take on this conversion therapy resurgence in the U.S. And really show people, especially people who will potentially later have children, who might see that as an option, that it's just simply not an option at all, and that it's just incredibly harsh and abusive and leads to very bad endings.
Well, and Daniel, let me say, in talking to producer Megan Mack before the program began, we were talking about how, again, not without giving too much away of the story or the film, this is not one of those films that or stories that just seeks to make an example of how bad something is and to leave it at that, or to shame or to smear. This is a case where the notion of pain but redemption, or at least learning and growing, is manifested in a very interesting and poignant way here, without giving too much away. Is that fair, Dan?
Oh, yeah. That's definitely the goal. This is not a film that is condemning or finger-pointing. This is a movie about family, about four Christian families. I myself am Christian. I have no interest in bashing religion or Christianity in particular. That's not what this is at all. This is just human stories of families and parents and how they navigate their faith and the reality that God has given them an LGBTQ child. This film, it's important to say maybe that this movie is a follow-up to my first film, which was called For the Bible Tells Me So. That started at Sundance in 2007 and won the Audience Award at Image Out in Rochester that same year. It's had an amazing life, and this movie is a follow-up to that. So if people are familiar with For the Bible Tells Me So, I like these biblical titles, then they will want to come out and see sort of the update, because this is sort of the next chapter.
Bishop Donato, can you tell us a little bit of your thoughts when you hear him describe a film that probably could take hard aim at Christianity writ large, or organized religion, or various strains of it that have been, frankly, so hurtful to LGBTQ people, but instead tries to turn the lens in a frank and honest way, but in a way that's more constructive? How important that is to you?
Well, I think it is important that the constructive view that Dan brings to it. I think there has been incredible amount of pain that has been done in the name of God. And, you know, one of the things that I feel is so important for people to know is that the eyes of God and the eyes of the church are not the same thing. Dan is exactly right, that we are created in God's image, that we are created to be who we are. One of the saddest stories for me was a woman, a lesbian woman, who was a very dear friend, that in the early part of our connection with one another, in sharing her story, she said when she found out that she was gay, she immediately, her next thought was, I have to fix this before God finds out. That was the result of her participation in a very evangelical movement in her childhood and in her early days. And it is so important for people to know that the church is humanly made. It is not made by God, that it has its limitations. It's also important for them to know that that is not held across all members of clergy or religious institutions, that there are places of healing, that there are places where all people can be who they are created to be, and to celebrate that. Because that's the moment when someone determines that they're gay, when God is celebrating in my eyes, that they have discovered a part of themselves that is divinely made. It is not a point that should be the source of shame.
For They Know Not What They Do is the film. When can people see it, Michael Gamilla?
We're showing it on Monday, this coming Monday, at 6 p.m., the 14th, at the Little Theater. And again, it's our documentary centerpiece, so we want everyone to come see it.
6 p.m., Monday, at the Little Theater.
Yeah, and we are actually, it's part of our Next Generation series, so anyone 25 and under can go see it for free. That's how we want people to come watch our films.
Great stuff. And in a moment, we're going to ask Sam to share her story. But before I let the director of the film go, Daniel, I know when we talk to documentary creators, we talk to filmmakers and artists, it's a long process of creation. And you never know how many audiences, how many people are going to have a chance to see the work, to take it in. You're clearly making an impact with this. What's the best case scenario? In your heart of hearts, what do you hope this film can do?
You know, I just hope it can reach the people that most need to see it. You know, when we cut the film in New York, we had a sign on the wall that we were always looking at, and it was that this film is for those who are not yet for equality. It's really amazing. It's such a huge support and uplift to have these LGBTQ festivals who screen your work, and a lot of people see it and word spreads in a really important and beautiful way. And what that leads to is the people that most need to see it in churches. For the Bible was in 4,000 churches, and we are headed that way before they know not what they do. We want to reach into the most conservative parts of this country and into the hearts of those who are not yet on board with equality, so they can really see it as a human issue, much less a political issue. So we're really on track. We're finishing up our festival run. We're about to sign our distribution deal. The film will go into theaters and then on a streamer or two like Netflix or Amazon or Hulu. We're not yet totally sure who. And then it will start screening in churches. And for me, that's what it's all about. It's the church screenings, because as Michael said so well, religion can do a lot of amazing things for humanity, and it's caused some of the deepest wounding and the most damage as well. So my films are all about how can we keep the good side and really stop the bad part of that.
Mm-hmm. Daniel Karslake, like the director of For They Know Not What They Do, congratulations on the success and the reach of the film. You got a chance to see it in Rochester Monday night at 6 p.m. at the Little. Dan, thanks for the time this afternoon. We greatly appreciate it.
Sure. Thanks so much.
Daniel Karslake coming to Image Out with the film. And Samantha Bonanno is someone who's been listening to this conversation, and I wonder how much of it rings with your story. Tell us about you.
Yeah, it rings very, very deep and true with me. My story in a small nutshell is just that I come from a fairly disconnected, non-communicative sort of family. And so when I landed myself in a youth group around the age of 15 at a local Protestant church, it felt very much like family. And I loved it. I loved the in-ness of it. I loved having sort of an automatic group of friends, and these people wanted me there so bad. They liked me, and I loved being wanted, and I loved being liked, and, just kind of part of a group. And I stayed in that evangelical space until I was about 30 years old. I went to a really conservative, small Christian school in New York State. I got married by the time I was 22. By the time I was 28, I had 3 kids. And by the time I was 30, I wanted out of all of it. So I just went through a lot of deconstruction, I guess, and just sort of questioning where I was at with my faith and realizing, man, this is actually not well with my soul. and I have to change something, a lot of things. And that led to me actually leaving my marriage. And subsequently after that, I began dating a woman, and she's now my wife. So in that process of sort of the deconstruction, the divorce, and the dating a member of my same sex, I sort of slowly, painfully lost all of my community and all of my, quote, family in that process. So that it was a hard, hard journey to walk through. And I like to say I haven't landed yet. I am still so very much for Jesus is like such a great guy, whether you mm-hmm. take him literally or metaphorically. Mm-hmm. It's the organized, quote, organized part of religion that I can't, I am finding that I have a deep aversion to now.
Okay, so you consider yourself an ex-evangelical in that way.
I do, yeah.
Do you consider yourself a Christian?
No.
Okay. Someone with love for some of the teachings and messages of Jesus.
Yes.
But someone who has felt their heart, well, change or at least evolve in a way that you understand yourself better, it sounds like.
Yes, understand myself better. And to, you know, just to throw back to what we were talking about before, that religion and God is not the same. God is not the same for everyone. That, mm-hmm. that term is not the same for everyone. And so it's a tough separation to make. That's why we call it deconstruction. You really have to take it all apart before you put it back together again.
So I have a question that I think may be unfair, but I want to be sensitive,
yeah.
but I want to understand your story as well as I can. Because I think, again, the reason Sam's here and the reason that Michael wants these kind of stories out there is they can be really instructive for us. The pain that people feel and the denial of selves they feel. So you got married at 22.
I did.
If I would have told you on the night that you were married that 8 years from now, after 3 children and 8 years of marriage, you will leave your marriage and then you will marry a woman, would your 22-year-old self have thought that's 5% possible, 10 or 50%, like deep down, maybe more, or like not even a chance?
Utterly 0%.
Even zero, not even 1%?
No. No, I she would have been terrified of the thought of that.
But even on reflection, privately, you would have thought, what's in there? Is there something in there? Is there something I'm suppressing? You didn't even feel that you were suppressing something then?
No. No. Really deep unawareness. And perhaps that's just personal to me.
I think everybody's story is different.
Yeah.
I'm wondering then when that started to not be 0%, when you started to feel like, hey, who I am might not be this thing.
You know, my story is really personal in that I, growing up, did not, and, you know, again, even into my 20s, did not have an awareness of being gay. I still don't even truly self-identify that way. Even though I happen to be married to a woman. I think for me, it came with the, like in my 20s when I got married, I was so attached to the idea of the way that things should be, had to be, were destined, were appropriate to be, right? And I really wanted to walk that straight and narrow. And I did for a while, and I did it really well. And then I think it wasn't until I gave myself permission to figure out what felt right for me and permission to allow that to be different from everyone else in my community, that I even was able to handle the thought of dating a female, simply because I wanted to. And having that come with no quote-unquote shoulds or should-nots, that was everything to me. I needed to be out of a space where I was boxed in. I needed to be on the outside of that so that I could say, I don't know, this might be a person that I like. It's a person. Let's see. Even to have the freedom to do that, I needed to be outside of that sort of restrictive space.
Okay, so that's after your marriage?
Yeah.
Okay. And you say you don't really self-identify even as gay or lesbian today. Do you self-identify in any certain way, or do you not think of in terms of labels?
I don't think of myself in terms of labels, mostly because I can't quite find one that I feel like fits.
Okay.
And I feel really great about that. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like I have to.
Well, then to the extent that as you wrestled with can I date a woman, what is the word should or expected of you, or the strictures of what life might have put on, how comfortable do you feel today with who you are and what you're doing?
Oh, fully, 100% fine.
And how does that feel? Does it feel amazing compared to what it was?
Truly, yes. Yeah, because I just feel like I was so very much stuck in fear. I was so afraid of what people would think of me. I was so afraid of the judgment. I was afraid of what my kids would think of me.
Yeah.
I was afraid of what my ex would tell my kids about me, you know, things like that. And I just got really stirred up and really stuck in the fear. And once I just decided, you know, they say, in order to discover new lands, you need to consent to lose sight of the shore, right? So that was, I think I was like, I'm just going to push off and just see. I don't know. Let's just see. Let's see if I can live through this. And now I think all the fears really came true. It happened. Like, all my worst fears really did happen. All my people left me, or I had to choose to leave them because it became unhealthy. And I think I just realized, well, okay, like, I can live through that.
But family, too? Lost family?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Not all my family, but some of my closest, most precious members of my family, yeah. But I have me. I have me. And I wouldn't trade any amount of community for that self-knowing. That's not worth it.
And so to kind of tie it to the theme of the film that we were just talking about, the filmmaker was clear that he didn't want to make a film that just bashes religion.
Yeah.
That there are people who, for whatever reason, with how they've been taught or raised, are doing what they think is the right thing to do, either with how they're raising their kids or what they're telling their children or what they're telling family or friends. They don't think they're trying to hurt anybody. And I think that it shows a lot of grace to at least give that space to say, I don't think you're malicious here, even if what you're doing is reckless or dangerous or harmful, and then allow some growth. When you think about your own life, you know, married at 22, didn't even think about yourself the way you think about yourself today. Are you angry or disappointed, or is there anything you would change? How do you view the relationships you had in sort of that same light, where you think you might have boxed yourself into what you considered who you really were, and if you have any blame or problem with that?
I've worked through that with years of therapy. And I had a lot of anger and resentment and was very jaded. But I loved this film so much because it really hits home the truth, which is that typically, certainly not all the time, but typically, people are not acting out of malice.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to hurt the people that they love. They genuinely want what's best for the person that they love. And they just so deeply believe that what is best for them might be this one thing or this one path. And to speak truth to it, there is hurt both ways. I know that I hurt the people that love me often as much as they hurt me. And so there have been some subsequent conversations where we've offered each other forgiveness for those things. But truly, each of us were doing the best that we could, offering the kind of love that we know how to give. We can only act from our own perceptions. And so I think that's why films like this are so hugely important, is because it changes our perceptions. When we see other people's stories and we see parents' heartaches and we see people say, if I had just known better, if I had just acted differently, everything could have been changed. So much could have been saved. And I do think that's true in my case. And also, the learning process is invaluable.
Bishop Donato, when you listen to Samantha's story, what do you think the lessons are for church leaders and, frankly, for families and evangelical circles?
Well, I think some of the lessons are, Evan, that, you know, we have to look at the way that religion has played a role in this message and the way that it has increased the discrimination in communities and in life, and the ways that it has misled parents, especially, I can't even just say especially, because all of those who come to an awareness that they're not straight, you know, the pain that has caused is deep. It's a very, very deep pain because our faith is something that is so central to the core of our being. And to communicate a message that God does not approve, that we are in words that are used over and over again, that those who are not straight are an abomination, those are strong words. They carry heavy weight. And people are fearful. They're fearful because this is what they've been taught. And now, coming from the standpoint of a parent, now they're all of a sudden encountering the child that they love, who's saying, I don't fit in this box that we all thought I fit in, but I don't. So there's so much damage that has been done. And, you know, we have to come back to the realization of Jesus, you know, who really warned against judging. The measure with which you judge will be used to judge against you. You know, we're not called to be the judges when it comes to the divine. We're called to love people for who they are. That is how Jesus lived his life, by loving people, even those that society at that time considered on the fringe. Even those that society considered to be quote-unquote sinners. He reached beyond what religion of the time was saying to identify with the soul of each person. That's our charge. That's what religion needs to also do, is to help people understand who they are and the love that comes from God. Not to stand in a place of judgment. Hmm.
Samantha, if you had grown up in a family that was not religious, in a community that was not religious, do you think you would have been comfortably dating women in your teenage years? Do you think you would have viewed your own sexuality differently early on?
I think so. It's really hard to say for sure. I think in general, all of my horizons probably would have been a little bit broader, which may or may not have been a good thing. I don't know. I genuinely loved the safety of boundaries. Mm-hmm. It worked for my personality for a long, until it didn't. I do think that things would have been different. I don't know if that means they would have been better.
Really honest, powerful stuff this hour, which is exactly what Image Out seeks to promote, these kind of conversations and understanding. And Michael Gamilla from the Image Out Festival, which kicks off on Thursday, is here. After our only break of the hour, Michael, we're going to talk about another film. But before we go to break, let me ask Michael to tell you where you can find the schedule and learn more about everything that's coming your way with Image Out coming up.
As I mentioned before, we're available online at our website, imageout.org. And our festival guides are actually available most everywhere, even at the Little Theater, at the Dryden Theater, and on Facebook. Most everyone's online nowadays, so they find a lot of information online.
Imageout.org, online.
Yes.
For the schedule, the film that we talked about in our first half hour, coming your way on Monday at 6 p.m. at the Little Theater. After our only break, we're going to talk about a film called Unsettled, next on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, a conversation about a video clip that Ellen DeGeneres released. She's defending herself for sitting with George W. Bush during a football game this past weekend. They took a picture together laughing and smiling, and a lot of people loved it. They said, here are two people with different views sitting together, bridging divides. Others thought Ellen shouldn't do that, that this is a person who's harmed entire populations, and some lines should be drawn. We'll debate it next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Want to welcome on the line Tom Shepard, the director and producer of a film called Unsettled, who's with us now. Tom, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, Evan.
Well, thank you for taking the time to be with us. And the film is called Unsettled. Michael Gamilla, programming director for Image Out. Why did you choose this film for the festival?
Because I think immigration, and especially immigration, is a big topic nowadays. And the last couple of years, there's been a lot of talk about, especially in Europe, because of all the refugees running away and seeking refuge in a lot of the other neighboring countries. But we don't get to talk a lot about that here in the U.S., especially when it concerns LGBTQ people, trying to flee their countries that, you know, they could face death and persecution. And they think that the U.S. is a good refuge for them. And suddenly they come here and they realize it's not an automatic thing, especially nowadays with the policies and the administration we have, that it's not as open as they thought it would be. So I think it's a great way to start that discussion by bringing this film and getting people aware of these problems that are happening and put faces on the issue.
Well, the film, it's a recent film. It was made in 2015 with this data as a backdrop. So let me go ahead and read this. In 70 countries, it was illegal to be gay, lesbian, or transgender. In 4 of those countries, the punishment was death. Nearly 70% of asylum claims are denied by Homeland Security. And since 2016, the number of refugees allowed into the United States has been cut by 70%. So, Tom, why don't you tell us a little bit about why you decided to undertake this film?
Yeah, when we were researching this in 2014, I live in San Francisco. I'm a gay man myself, and I was just quite aware of the dissonance between the kind of accelerated rate of civil rights for LGBT people. That was when the sort of marriage equality, so-called marriage equality, same-sex marriage was winding itself to the Supreme Court, became law of the land. And yet you look, as Michael was saying, in many of these other countries in the Middle East and Africa, where things have actually gotten quite dire for LGBTQ plus people. The other piece is, you know, the refugee resettlement model in this country. The U.S. historically has been kind of a beacon for people and has typically accepted a lot of people, but it's very sort of family-based. So a family will flee a war-torn country, say from Iraq, and they'll come to, say, California, and immediately they'll be connected to the diaspora, you know, a mosque or community centers. But if you're a gay Iraqi and you come to California, like, the last people that you want to see likely are other Iraqis. So those folks are fleeing from family, not with family. And at the time we were making this film, we were sort of curious, okay, who's then going to step forward and kind of take care of these folks who are coming, who are at risk for, you know, much more kind of isolation. And so that's what triggered our cameras. And we filmed from 2015 to just 2019. And as you said, we just released the film in April of this year.
So I'm looking at the story, for example, of someone like Junior, a gay man from Congo. Let me just read some of the things said about life in that kind of a scenario. Number one, people feel like they just have to come and attack you. When you look so openly gay in Africa, you are 100% target. In Congo, they say gay people don't exist. This is not African culture. Tell me a little bit about that story.
So, yeah, Junior grew up in a fundamentalist Christian family. His mom is a preacher, is a Christian preacher in Kinshasa. You know, well-educated family. His dad is actually a professor at of agriculture at the university there. But Junior knew very early on that the impulses that he had as a gay person, and then as on top of that as a gender nonconforming person, was not going to comport with the society. And so he began a 4-year journey, really, of fleeing Congo, fleeing his family, going to South Africa, being there for 2 years, having many difficulties, including harassment by the police, and then ultimately applying to the United Nations for refugee status. And his is a very typical story. And then, of course, you know, Evan, you think, okay, these people then are being resettled in San Francisco. That makes a lot of sense. A city that's immigrant friendly, that's got a lot of LGBT rights, sort of an emerald city. But the truth is the challenges just begin for these folks. And that was kind of the focus of our film, as you see how difficult it is. I mean, you know, middle-class people are having a hard time living in cities like San Francisco. Imagine trying to live there on a $350 a month refugee benefit for 8 months. It's very, very difficult for these folks.
And then the story of Marie and Cheyenne, a lesbian couple from Angola, who, you know, this is an emotional hook because we don't know if they're going to be able to stay in the United States. And they had a horrendous time in Angola. Neighbors killed their dog. They were persecuted, threatened, rejected by their families. Marie's mother gives them bad food to make them sick. I mean, it's just hard to get your head around everything that they went through. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about Marie and Cheyenne.
Yeah, I mean, their story to me is pretty astounding, because women, particularly in many of these cultures, to be able to leave, need permission from their husbands or fathers or uncles. So for these two women to kind of cultivate this loving relationship in Angola and then have the wherewithal to kind of get out and, you know, get a temporary student visa to get into the United States, and then a kind of three-year adjudication process where they had to find a pro bono attorney that could file their asylum claim and go through all this, all the while not being able to work. So on the one hand, the United States says, come to our shores, we have an asylum program, but then you get here and you basically can't get a work permit for 6 months after the date that you apply, which is often a year or two after folks have entered the country. So watching these women was quite inspiring to our whole team. They just had an extraordinary amount of fortitude to survive the way that they did.
So in this film, much like the previous film we talked about, in Unsettled, you're meeting different people from different backgrounds and challenges. And I want to turn back to Bishop Denise Donato, pastor at Mary Magdalene Church here in the Rochester area, because we've been talking about the role of the church, or at least the role of religion, organized religion, in doing harm at times throughout history. Junior is someone whose mother is a pastor and would preach that gay people should be killed. How far do we have to go worldwide before we don't think about religion and organized religion being maybe harmful in this way? I mean, it feels like this is not a film from 10 years ago, 25 years ago, 50 years. This is happening now.
Worldwide, we have a long ways to go, a very long ways to go. And worldwide, we're looking at different faith traditions as well, and the teachings that are a part of those traditions. So it's... I can't emphasize enough the damage that religion can do when it moves beyond its charter to help us to understand who God is and to help others develop a relationship with that God.
And briefly, before we lose the hour here, I just want to ask you, in a minute or less, give me your, in the last 18 months since we talked, how things are going at Mary Magdalene and the kind of community you want to build here.
The Mary Magdalene Church has got a beautiful, vibrant community. It really is a church where all are welcome and all are invited and all are celebrated. We have a growing congregation. We have families. We have gay couples. We have straight couples. We have individuals. We have those who have found a home, who've been divorced and, you know, feel as though the church has excluded them. So we really have a very, very vibrant community. We celebrate our Mass on Sundays at 10 o'clock. We're located right in East Rochester, right on Main Street in East Rochester. And it is a beautiful place. And a large part of that is because of the community that has come together.
Michael Gamilla, when can people see Unsettled as part of the Image Out Festival?
We are actually showing it this Sunday at 12:15 at Little Theater. It will be its New York State premiere. And again, it's part of our Next Generation series, which means anyone 25 and under can go see the movie for free.
12:15 Sunday at the Little Theater for Unsettled. Tom, what do you hope moviegoers go to see, filmgoers go to see, and take with them when they see your film here, Unsettled?
Yeah, I just think most Americans don't know this story. I mean, when I started, I didn't really know the difference between a refugee and an asylum seeker. And so I think, you know, my hope is, having filmed these folks for over 4 years, that maybe it'll humanize the stories and kind of lived experiences of folks who are just, you know, really struggling on basic level to survive. And maybe that will help inform some of the public discourse around refugees right now in this country.
Tom, thanks for taking the time to join the program today. We really appreciate it, and good luck with the film.
Thank you so much.
The director and producer of Unsettled, Tom Shepard, joining us. So now you've heard from a couple of the directors as part of Image Out. How many films total as part of the festival, Michael Gamilla?
We have 77 films spread throughout 40 programs for the 10 days that we're going. And like I said before, these films come from 21 different countries. So it's a very international program.
You got 30 seconds. You want to promote any more that you are excited about? I know they're all like your children. It's hard to pick.
Yeah, we're opening this Friday with the film. So come join us at our our first film, Vita in Virginia, is about to sell out, and we're selling a lot of festival passes. And we're doing something different for our closing night film. It's actually a recorded performance of a show from the UK, London. It's called Everybody's Talking About Jamie. It's a wonderful show, and it's a musical. So, and the good thing is no one has seen it in the US, so it's something new.
Michael is with the Image Out Festival. He's programming director for Image Out, and online at imageout.org. Have a wonderful festival. Thank you for taking the time to be here.
Thanks for having us.
You got it, Michael Gamilla. Samantha Bonanno, good luck to you. Thank you for sharing your story. Powerful stuff this hour, and we really admire you. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
And our thanks as well to Bishop Denise Donato, the pastor at Mary Magdalene Church in East Rochester. Nice having you back here, Bishop. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Evan.
Short break. More connections coming up.